Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So the first hour of the show has had a massive focus on investments, on your pocket, on potential asset classes, shifts in asset classes and the trends that we're seeing in markets. In this hour of the show, we're stepping a bit back into the economy, into a more broader perspective of the economy, but that will also ultimately have an impact on your pocket. The question that we're asking this evening happens to do with a vegetable import ban from South Africa by Botswana and Namibia, and trying to understand a little bit more about what's behind it and what the implications may be. They've sparked debate in the sector of agriculture by imposing a prolonged ban on imported citrus and vegetables from SA that critics have actually argued goes against several principles of regional trade agreements. I'm curious to understand more of the idiosyncrasies about this ban. South Africa had a slight interruption with our citrus exports last year, maybe the year before, with Spain, and very quickly that was resolved in terms of understanding the cold storage rules and things like that. And I'm wondering if it's that or a deeper issue. Helping us understand a great deal more about this is Thabile Nkunjana, agricultural economist, who's on the line right now. Thabile, thank you so much for joining us on Kaya Biz.
Good evening to you, Rufile, and the listeners. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. This is quite a surprising turn. We very seldom hear of unprovoked, I think maybe is the word I'm looking for, bans in South Africa from our SACU and sort of partners. SADC partners, what seems to be the issue?
So this has been actually happening for some time, Rufile. I mean, if you are to look deep into it, even around 2010, there has been similar issues to this, except that now it is kind of intensifying in terms of its implementation. For instance, in 2021 December, that's when, for instance, Botswana announced that they are banning around 10 or more of vegetable products from South Africa, which included some of the top exportable products, which include the likes of onions, potatoes, tomatoes, garlic, and so forth. So this has been going on for quite some time, except that it has not been at the scale that we are seeing it at now. And as a result of that scale, we are also seeing an impact on the revenues by South Africa, where we've seen even, for instance, if you had to look into the exports revenues for last year, you would see that there was a decline of around 15% if we are measuring the money in dollars. So we are seeing that economic impact on towards the South African part of things.
Before we step into the impact, Thabile, just help us set the scene, please. Again, what were the reasons provided for this, and why is it seen as going against principles of regional trade agreements?
Okay. Yeah, no, that's actually easy. So the main reason specifically that the Botswana government provided was that they are putting on some programs within their country where they are trying to increase their local production for these particular products, which is fine, because also from the customs union's point of view, there are provisions where a country within the bloc would want to sort of say they have a typically industry that they want to increase their production, and therefore they will have to have some sort of plans to protect it from a competition, because it's actually a competitive issue, this one. As a result, specifically of those reasons, then there has been this ban, at least, which is going to last until next year from Botswana's standing point. But as for Namibia, it has always been a communication that has flourished over the time, because I think on a monthly basis, Namibia does share that they're going to be closing their border for certain products. As a result, the impact between the two countries has not been the same. There have actually been 50% of a decline from the Botswana's point of view, but for Namibia, it has been very small, because this is something that they have been doing. Also, remember, it also has to do with the natural resources that these countries have. It's something that for years, Botswana has been a very brilliant country in producing cattle, and has been good in exporting that. And also, all of a sudden, also the diamond is something that it has came through. But because of now they are trying to diversify their production of other things. These bans are emanating from that, but other than the, you know, the production and all that, the costume itself, it also goes against it, including SADC itself, because these are the blocks that should be freely trading of products across the region, which is something that is written down and also against the rules of the, you know, of trading within this country, including the trade organization.
But hang on, I just want to be clear. Earlier on, if I understood you correctly, Thabile, there are, even within trade blocks, sometimes there are sometimes announcements by countries that we would like to encourage our own production within our country, which of course is what Dr. Masisi, the president of Botswana, has said. He said on X, our ban was a powerful move to boost our local farmers and economy and empowers Botswana by promoting self-sufficiency and improving livelihoods, which on the face of it is perfectly reasonable. But I hear you that the, you know, that their landscape might not be amenable to mass citrus production. But at the very least, with this ban from Botswana being extended to 2025, there's visibility and an ability to plan. The Namibia month-to-month shift seem to be a little bit, as much as you're saying there's a smaller impact, they seem to create a lack of predictability there. And is that fair within the trade bloc?
I think what we're advocating for all this is that there has to be a clear communication and the plan. And when countries do plan, especially when they are neighbors and within a bloc like the SACU members, is that there has to be a clear plan in terms of what their intentions are. For instance, there are some instances when you would hear that in 2 days that one of these countries, Botswana, for instance, I think it happened for cucumber last year. They banned the cucumbers within 2-3 days. That is not enough time for one to be able to remember. Exactly. Oh. So this is not something that we'll want to see, because it totally, you even wonder if what is the intentions behind it, because we understand that actual products, they are produced for a certain period of time, can be 2 months, can be 3 months. And as a government, you know that you're going to have this product from this period to that period. And then after that, the product's not going to be available. And that's when you do bring in the substitution by importing, which is something other countries do, including Namibia, as I was making an example as earlier on. You know, so this is the kind of transparency that I think it would be beneficial for all the parties.
I'd agree, Thabile. The other thing is, it's not just the limited harvest period and then having to plan for import substitution. It's also the fact that we're speaking about perishables here. If I need to redirect this to a different market, let's say I can't absorb it in the South African market. Let's say I had actually made provisions in a different way, or there's a bumper harvest. I now need to find a new buyer of cucumbers in 2 days in large volumes before they rot. So I'm curious to know, one, what does that impact? How does this kind of lack of predictability impact South Africans? Because I imagine you suddenly have a flood of supply. I mean, is this why you're sometimes driving around and suddenly there's just a whole bunch of oranges at every traffic light?
you're very correct about that. You remember there was a year when we had an issue with some of the citrus that South Africa exports to Europe.
Yes.
Because of the ban that happened, the restrictions that, you know, that happened around that time. Like tons of oranges, there were mountains of oranges being dumped parts of the country. And imagine the input cost that the farmers have put there. You're not only talking about fertilizer, insecticides, you talk about the diesels, the petrols, and the other lot of stuff, the labor that goes into that. Now you are a farmer. You went to land bank to borrow money. You went to other commercial banks to borrow money to make sure that you have a product so that you can sustain a market that you developed over the years. So remember, to develop a supply chain, it takes years.
Yes.
And once you understand that you have that market, you got it. Properly, you develop a whole supply chain where you develop other businesses, exports out logistics, and the labor that goes across to the processing and all that. So there's a lot that goes into this, which is why there's a lot of cry, because the issue is, as much as we're talking about vegetables and citrus now, the fear is that this might spill over to other products. And that's something that we don't want when we are talking about the Africa Free Trade area for developing countries which have small economies that depend heavily on exports.
Okay, I'm so grateful that you said that, because that was going to be my next question. So we've established what the impact is on South Africans, not only the farmer, but also the glut this excess supply impacts the farmer who now has probably in the supply chain, I don't know, ShopRite or Pick and Pay are like, well, I didn't order 50 oranges, I ordered 25. If you're going to give me 50, I'm going to have to bring down the price, which is not bad for the consumer. Yeah. But now the farmer's like, well, now I have to give these away to the guy to sell at the traffic light. So there's quite a bit of back and forth. And as you say, as he or she developed that supply chain over many, many years, there was an expected return, which is now probably undermined. So now
investments could be
exactly. And now, as you rightly say, there's also the external impact. So two sides of this. I just want to know, are we in a position, for example, to suddenly pivot and sell cucumbers now to Angola? I mean, how strong are those relationships? But secondly, as you rightly point out, this seems hostile in the space where the Africa Free Trade Agreement is intended to be the rolled out across the continent.
I mean, you know, there was one thing that I think we need to understand about trade is that when countries, first of all, it takes some significant amount of time for countries to agree that they're going to trade a certain product. And once that happens, there's going to be some sort of return requirements in terms of the phytosanitary measure, that is to make sure that the product that the country is going to be buying is safe to consume and all that. And this cuts across to a lot of countries, as much as there is a body that deals with it. But some countries, they have different standards, including Europe, for instance, that require certain standards for its products that are to be imported. So now, including that time, it means then you add the period that you have developed a relationship over years. The SACU block is one of the oldest blocks in the world, so over 100 years. So it tells you that how much of investment that have been put in this. So in terms of now trying to diversify those products to send it to other countries, trade is affected by a lot of things. It's language, it's culture and all that. And if you are to look into SACU countries, in South Africa, you found every person from Namibia, from Angola, from Lesotho, from Eswatini to Botswana. The same when you go to Botswana, you find South Africans. But so the culture there is almost similar. So even the products that you are trading there, that's why it has been easy,
right,
you know, to sort of have this trading relationship. But now if you are to find a different product, to send the same product to other countries, for instance, Northern African countries, it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
There's an issue of culture, the language and all that. So it takes quite a lot of time, which is why it is an issue for perishable products like this to be saying, you're just going to diversify, take them to other countries. Does not work like that. There has to be roads, there have to be infrastructure to allow these products to be transported. Another issue with Africa, as we know, it is their infrastructure, roads, rails, that you take these products to those markets. So it's not an easy thing, which is why it is being condemned in a number of fascist ways.
It's 22 minutes past 7. If you're just joining me, that's the voice of Thabile Nkunjana, agricultural economist. We're trying to understand the potential implications of a vegetable import ban and fruit import ban from South Africa by Botswana and Namibia, some of the oldest relationships that have been held in SACU, the South African Customs Union, and on the African continent. There are so many implications. And one of those that we're speaking about, of course, is that how it impacts pricing, how it impacts value chains for farmers here on the ground. And of course, the potential impact on the very Africa Free Trade, Continental Free Trade Agreement that has been legislated by all 54 countries, I believe, and promulgated in all of their parliaments. And so we should be seeing more adherence to this this wish of cohesion. Thabile, just help me understand a little bit in terms of the value here. So I know agricultural export from South Africa is about $13 billion as of last year, and 40% of that is on the African continent. How are these particular line items financially? How big is that market, the citrus market to Botswana and the citrus market to Namibia?
So if we are to take, specific products for fruits and all that, it's going to be different across these countries based on the fact that, one, their populations are relatively small. But again, now when you look into what they produce versus what they consume, then that's when the scale comes in. For instance, if you are to take specifically the percentage that goes from South Africa to Botswana, is relatively small. I don't think it's above 5%. It remains very small because the market is not that big. But now, for the issue is, when you look into that, into specific farmers that sell that, for instance, you find that farmers that are in Limpopo, they are more in terms of proximity in the range too, and find out that one farm would have around 60% or 70% of his or her citrus going to the other side. So,
yeah.
And then now the impact, it becomes bigger in that sense.
Mm.
Otherwise, when you have to look into it, overall South Africa is very big when it comes to citrus. It's a leading producer, exporter in the world. So it is, when you have to look into the scale across the world, when you look in this market, Botswana and Namibia, for instance, you will look at it as small. But when to look into final details, you will realize that there are also other, you know, specifications that you really need to look into those, you know, specifications, and then understand the impact specifically.
And it's very acute on farmer by farmer. So what are your hopes for how we resolve this? I mean, I hear you on the statement that we should have better coordination in the region. You've got a whole president tweeting that, oh, we're going to be improving our domestic production. And I hear you saying that it's not the most realistic of statements given their landscape. Have we had a meeting with SACU, or is this a bilateral discussion that needs to happen?
So the push around this has been around the entire bloc engaging on this, because it appears to be beginning momentum across the bloc. And that is a serious part, because I remember even when the SACU members are going for negotiations for trade, they go on as an individual. That is, it's all these countries, South Africa, Lesotho, Botswana, yes, Namibia, and Eswatini. So when they go for negotiations, they must be trust that we are going to this as a bloc. And that's something that has made, you know, this progress. Even if you have to look specifically for Botswana, for instance, if I can take it, they are around 80% of their agricultural imports, sorry, exports,
mm-hmm,
they come to South Africa. So South Africa is not only an exporter to this country, it's also a buyer of them, you know. So this is a very significant part of things to that. So economically, this isn't just a win. It's not a win-win for both. Actually, both parties are losing. For instance, I've seen that a lot of informal traders now, they are even going as far as smuggling some products, vegetable products, into Botswana. And now that's developing a black market that the government might not be able to develop.
Manage.
With such a market, once it develops, it creates a whole another issues, you know. So economically, there is no win for either Botswana or South Africa or any other country within the bloc that is going to implement this. But of course, the risk, or at least the factor, the impact factor, is going to be different for various reasons, depending on the products themselves and also the proximity of the farmers, you know, to the market that they are sending their products into. So generally, we just need to make sure that this gets looked to, you know, at a broader scale, not necessarily in one country or bilaterally. It needs to be looked into as a bloc. Because
okay,
this is one thing that makes this bloc to succeed in their trading.
Correct. So, Thabile, just to clarify, my question was, have they met as SACU? In other words, I do believe it is a regional issue, because I think it actually goes beyond economic. I believe it is political. I think, as you rightly say, the economic implications for everybody and incentives seem to be disincentivized. So there must be some kind of political or strategic intention here. And that would require a negotiation at SACU level. Yes, I see the bilateral trades statements, but I was just wondering, are they going to meet as a group, as a bloc, or would there be maybe sort of an engagement, agricultural minister to agricultural minister, at, you know?
The last time I heard around this, it was that the head of state, it is quite at a higher level in terms of the dialogues. It's meaning, and that all the countries that are within the bloc, I've been planning to do that. Of course, there has been some small talks here and there, but they actually need for that bigger, you know, kind of engagement, which the last time I've heard, there hasn't been much of that. So, which is something that is needed, you know, urgently, because this looks like it is escalating and at a pace that might be not be able to contain, at least in the northern, at least in the shorter period of time.
I reckon. And what the other thing that worries me, Tabile, sorry, last point, is just in an environment where everybody's jockeying for the attention of China, Europe, you know, you don't want your bloc partners to start fragmenting now. We would be stronger as a bloc. And so, yeah, the sort of personal interests need to kind of be a bit more regional, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing that made you know, the EU as a region became so successful in what they are doing.
Yeah.
And then as a result, if you had to look into them as a region, they are doing very well. They have one voice when they are talking about restriction of certain things,
right,
about production, you know, everything. And that's something that I think we should be pushing forward to, especially now that we are having a larger market, which is African free trade, right, which is open.
Correct.
For the entire block of SACU and, of course, for the continent. And I remember now we have been seeing a lot of this protectionism even from the developed countries. Now, if we are also as developing, I mean, from the developed countries, there's been this protectionism, as you have seen, with the EU. So for the developing countries like ours, we need to make sure that we stay away from that and we try to have a smooth trade as much as possible. It's not easy, but it is still doable.
It is. Agricultural economist Tabile Ngunjana, thank you so much for your insights this evening. It is 7:30 here on Kaya Biz.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.